Those guys are out in the rain are all coming in going, oh my gosh, it's freezing in here. How you doing? Everybody good this week? Wow. Everybody good this week? Well, I'm glad to hear that. We're glad you're here. This is Genesis Church. We're kind of a new church. We're just kind of figuring out what God wants us to be and wants us to do. And we're excited about just sharing Jesus. It's all about Him. I have found that in my life, I treat my life a lot like a file cabinet. I've got all these little files in here, and I just kind of get into them, and I pull out the, first of all, you know, maybe the work file, and I've got that file, and I go through my day, and I do work, and I do the busyness of life that's that, and I keep that kind of separate, and when I'm done with that, I kind of close that file, and I put it away, and a lot of times I'll go home, and I'll get with the family, and I'll pull out the family file. That's part of my life I really enjoy, because I like hanging out with my kids and my wife, and, you know, so I get home, and that'll be an important part. Now, that's an important separate part of my life. I've got my family file. You know, all the stuff that I do, all our fun stuff goes in here. You know, sometimes problems, you know, kind of get in the family file, and that can be kind of hard. But the family file is, you know, this file. And then there'll be other times where I'll pull out my recreation file. There's a lot of decoys in this file and golf balls, okay? This is kind of part of my life that just, it's separate from this and separate from that. I've got my recreation file, and, you know, I've got people that I really love to hang out with and do the stuff that I like to do when I'm relaxing or entertaining myself, things like that. Sometimes in this file, there's some good movies in there, and maybe some movies I shouldn't have gone to see, but they're in a file and nobody knows. It's just kind of a separate deal. And, you know, then I've got my what am I doing after church file? A lot of food in this one, okay? Good food. We're going to go to a restaurant somewhere, and I spend way too much time in this file, probably. Anyway, you know, I got that file, and in my life it's kind of like this, but then I have this other file that's, you know, just kind of, sometimes it's hard to find. I thumb through my file cabinet, I can't figure out where it is. Oh, there it is. It's my, the God file. Sometimes I pull this out on Sunday morning and I go to church and I got my God file and I take it. It's really kind of separate from everything else in my life. It's its own separate little file. And so I take it and I go to church and I hang out at church and I do the church stuff. Sometimes when my life is just really kind of rotten and things aren't working, I like to pull this file out and thumb through it. And, you know, that's a good time to pull out the God file. You know, maybe if things are going kind of good and I'm feeling good about life and I want, you know, the good stuff to keep happening, sometimes I'll grab that file then too and I'll pull it out. But it's really its own little separate file. And I can be really good about when I'm done with the file, putting it back in the cabinet. Keeping it separate from everything else. Not letting it really affect the rest of my life. I don't know, do you find yourself like that sometimes? That it's like my life is compartmentalized. I got that in the notes, and if you're not quite sure what I mean, this is what I mean. That my life is structured in such a way that if I got these little Tupperware boxes of life, and they each have their own little seal, and they each have their own little place, and I don't really mix them, and God is one of those boxes. God is one of the files. I go to the cabinet, and I pull out the file that I need for that time in life. I don't let those files mix. You know, I don't want what takes place on Friday night to really mix with Sunday morning. Yeah, I'm the same person, but I've got different files, different compartments in life, and my life is kind of structured that way. And sometimes, as we're going through life, God bursts into the middle of our lives. And if our lives are structured like this, we're not quite sure what to do with it or how to wrestle with it. We're looking at a guy named Jacob. Jacob is just a messed up dude who, for some reason, God decided to use him, okay? And sometimes I don't know why God chose the people he chose, but he chose them to prove that he is God. If God always chose like the really cool people who had their life all together and that's the only people he chose, we'd give all the credit to the really cool people because they got, you know, they're the ones who have their lives all together and everything's perfect and everything's hunky-dory. But when God chooses the last person on earth that we would pick and does great things through those people, then we stop and go, holy cow, how did God pull that off? Well, Jacob's one of those guys. I mean, Jacob is a twin. He and his brother, were born. His brother's just a few minutes older. In fact, the Bible tells us that as they were born, Jacob really literally reached out and grabbed the heel of his brother during birth, you know. And Esau came out. He was all red and hairy, and he grows up to be a manly man. He's, you know, must hunt and watch football, and, you know, he's, you know, his ringtones are NFL theme songs, and he, you know, he cries in sports movies. This is Esau. Jacob is kind of, you know, the wimpy dude. You know, he's like, you know, perfect hair and no hair in his arms. Jacob definitely, you know, Esau's got hair all over his back, you know, he, just not a pretty thing, you know. When he takes off his shirt and he does the swimsuit thing, everybody's like, oh, shave or put a shirt on, one of the two, because it's not just hair, it's red hair, and that don't work, okay? But Esau is this hairless, you know, just perfect kind of, you know, he's got the walk, and he, you know, he would be all into, like, Will and Grace. I mean, this is who Jacob is. And Jacob is this guy. Not only that, but from day one, his name literally means heel grabber, or means somebody who's a cheat. Literally, what his name means is life is all about me. We kind of, you know, we got our stained glass windows, and what we wanted to do is we wanted to use Jacob to really talk about the fact that sometimes when we are involved with God, we make life about me. And God created us for himself. He loves us deeply, passionately. He's just crazy about us. But we'll never experience the fullness of God when we make life about me and we put God in a file, put him in a filing cabinet, and pull him out only when we're going to go do something religious or when we need him. And that's kind of Jacob's life. You know, I just kind of to help illustrate this morning, I've got all my notes and stuff in the file, so I'm just pulling them out one at a time, just to remind you that this is what we do with life sometimes. So, you know, we're talking, as we talk about Jacob this morning, I want you to understand that this guy has really made a mess of his life. He started by cheating his brother out of this thing called a birthright. His brother came in, he was starving, he'd been hunting all day, and Jacob met him when he showed up, met Esau when he showed up. They were older now, obviously. The birthright was basically, I get twice as much of my dad's inheritance as you get. And he was starving, and so when he showed up, Jacob said, I'll give you a bowl of soup for your birthright. I get your part of, you know, our inheritance if you just eat the soup. There was no compassion. It's Jacob self-centered. He's just all about himself, and I'm going to cheat my brother out of the inheritance, out of his place in the family. And then when he gets older, he and his mom kind of come up with this crazy plan where they go in and they lie to her husband, Jacob's father. They lie to him. They dress him up, put hair all over him, and he goes in and acts like Esau and lies to Esau and lies to his dad so his dad will give the blessing to him. Now, we live in this day and age where this birthright and the blessing don't make a lot of sense. But in that time, the birthright and the blessing is what a family would use to determine who would then become the leader of the family. After dad dies, you know, we get married and we move away and it's kind of all over the place. But in that day and time, family state, you know, there'd be tents everywhere and it's all one big family and somebody was in charge of the family. Somebody owned more stuff, and not only did they own more stuff, but when it came down to it, somebody got to call the shots and run the show. And Jacob loved being that person. He loved when he was the one in the middle of everything and he got to do everything he wanted. And so Jacob literally lied to his dad to get the blessing, which is when his dad said, when Isaac, his father, looked at him and said, you are now going to be in charge of this family. His dad was blind, he was losing his hearing, and they tricked him. I mean, this is the kid. But see, when you start messing with people, one of the things you need to do, some of the guys were telling me about a UFC fight that happened, I guess, last night, where some guy like came out of the crowd and started challenging the best UFC fighter. And so, like, they got in a ring, and this guy, you know, beat the snot out of him in, like, a minute and a half. You know, when you choose to tango with somebody, you need to take inventory of who it is you're going to fight with. And I don't think Jacob did that. Jacob's like, I'm going to cheat my brother. And then all of a sudden it dawned on him, okay, I'm the pansy, and my brother is Joe Hunter. He has, you know, gun rack on his camel, and he will hunt me down and kill me. And now I'm in trouble. What am I going to do? And you know, his brother Esau, you know, the hairy, big, I will eat you dude, is now hunting him down. And Jacob realizes he's in trouble. He goes to his mom. His mom lies to his dad again and basically says, you know, all the girls who live around here, they're, you know, They're just wicked, you know, all they want is one thing, and we don't want Jacob, our youngest son, to marry one of those guys, or one of those girls. Guys, that would be really bad. And one of those girls. And so they come up with this plan to send Jacob back to her hometown, which is several hundred of miles away. And now Jacob leaves, and he's by himself. He is running from his brother. His own little twisted life has created this incredible crisis. And the story we're going to look at this morning deals with Jacob in that situation. But what I want you to see with this story as we look at this, it's a story you may be familiar with. You may have heard of the idea of Jacob's ladder. Actually, there are two rock and roll songs. Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven is based on this passage, okay? You know, it comes out of the idea of this stairway. But what happens in this story is that God meets Jacob at his lowest point. But what's just nuts about it, just absolutely nuts, is that God speaks to him in a very clear way. And Jacob is still playing the God file thing. Jacob has this encounter with God. He pulls out his God file. He has this religious experience. He builds a little monument to that experience. And then he leaves Bethel, this place, puts the file back, and goes on with his life. And the reason I think we can talk about that this morning is because so often that's what I do. I come to a place where I come to a church service or I go to an event where God speaks to me. I literally know that he's spoken to my heart and I know very clearly what he said to me. And I kind of build a monument in my mind to that place. I go on with my life and I do just the same thing, and I don't let that affect me, impact me. And this morning, that's kind of what I want to talk to you about. I got some questions I just want you to ponder. First of all, why are you here this morning? Why did you show up at Genesis? Why did you choose to come to this place? What are you expecting while you're here? When's the last time you knew God was speaking into your life? When is the last time you literally knew that God was kind of talking to you? And what was he saying to you? This morning, when we're done, after the last song is sung, what are you hoping and expecting will take place as a result of being here this morning? We're really going to spend this morning talking about worship and what happens in here and how that should affect us and how most of us have a tendency to do just like Jacob and compartmentalize. And so if you have your Bibles, take it out. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 28. I believe in your Bible, it's going to be on page 20. If you picked one up, if you don't have a Bible, we have one at the end of the row for you. We'd love for you to take one of those Bibles, use it this morning. If you don't have a Bible at home, we'd love for you to take that home with you. You take that as our gift, read it, study it, find out what God is saying, because this is one of the ways that God speaks to us. And in Genesis chapter 20, we'll begin with verse 10. We'll begin with verse 10, and it says that Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran. This is what he's saying is Jacob left where his family was and his Esau and his mom and his dad, and his whole family. He left there and now he's making this long trek back to his mom's hometown, presumably to find a wife was the goal. And he came to a certain place and he stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay in that place to sleep. I mean, this is where Jacob is. Jacob, because he's a cheat, because he's just a twisted dude who uses people. His life is all about me. What's happened is God has put him now in a situation where he is alone. He is making this trip, and he realizes now it's nighttime. If I keep traveling, there's wild animals, there's wild people. I could get messed up here. And so he finds a place. It's just a random place, except it's not random to God. This random place where he's worn out. Sun's going down, I can't keep moving, and all he has for a pillow, the only thing he can find to put his head on and sleep on is this rock. He finds this rock, he lays it down, and I like camping sometimes, but listen, what my idea of camping is a tent with a double-decker air mattress in it, okay? If I sleep on the ground, I wake up in the morning, I can't move. I can't imagine what it would be like to camp with a rock is my pillow. But this is the situation. Jacob has put himself in this situation where he's got nothing. He's hopeless. And here's this rock. It's all he's got. And he puts this rock underneath his head and he falls asleep. Verse 12, and he dreamed. And behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to the heavens. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. The Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. Now, this is what goes on. He had a dream. In the Bible, very often, God will literally speak to people through dreams. People ask, does God still speak? And the answer is absolutely. I don't think God has shut up and left and, you know, he's off, you know, watching a movie or football or is off making another planet and he's kind of leaving this to himself. I believe that God still speaks. And I also believe that it is possible that he can speak through dreams, he can speak through other people, but it's very important that we understand that when God speaks, the primary way he speaks to us is through the scriptures and through his son, Jesus. You know, somebody comes to me and says, I had a dream last night. I was walking in my underwear through school. What does this mean? What is God trying to say? And the answer is, you shouldn't have eaten that burrito. You know, not every dream is from God. But here's the thing I want you to understand. In the Bible, when God speaks through dreams and through visions and through other ways, God always, first of all, the people always knew that God had spoken. There wasn't any questions. Was that God? Was that too much Thai food? I'm not sure. People always knew that God had spoken to them. And they also knew specifically what God had said to them. There's no going to somebody and go, you know, most of the time, at least, there's no going and saying, I think God spoke. What is it supposed to be? There are a couple of exceptions to that in the Bible. But especially for God's people, they know what God had said to them. He's very clear about what he's speaking through dreams and other ways. And so Jacob lays down, he's laying on this rock, and he goes to sleep, and he has this dream. And the dream is this image that there's this stairway or this ladder that is going from, and it comes down. It doesn't go from earth up, it comes from heaven down. And this ladder has these angels going up and down on it. And he sees, as these angels are going up and down on it, he sees standing next to the stairway the God of the universe. Literally, it is Jesus himself. Before Jesus came to walk on this planet as a man and live here, Jesus always existed as God. And Jesus himself shows up and is standing next to this ladder. And then Jesus, God, begins to speak to him and begins to talk to him. And it says in verse 13, behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The first thing God says to him deals with who he is. He says, listen, I want you to know, I'm God. I'm the God of your father, Isaac. I'm the God of your father, Jacob. They followed me. They served me. But also, I am it. I am the only God. You need to hear me. You need to serve me. You need to know me. I'm God. He makes it very clear who he is. When God speaks to us, the first thing he's always going to do is help us understand who he is in the midst of it. And then he says, the land in which you lie, I will give you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread abroad the west and the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So he says, first of all, I'm God. And then he says, and Jacob, I've got a plan for you. I am doing something in your life, and here's what it is. You are part of a family that I've called out. Your grandfather, Abraham, I spoke to his life and he obeyed me. He followed me. He trusted me and I used him. And he had your dad, Isaac, and it was a miracle. And your dad, you know, was born to your grandpa when he was 100 years old. It was an incredible thing. And your dad followed me and trusted me. Jacob, that's who I am. And I have something going in your life. I am using you and your family. I'm going to create a nation out of your family. That nation will go on to become the Hebrews or the Jewish people. And out of the Jewish people, there will come one person. So there's a person, Jacob, who's going to become a people, the Jews, who will give us a person, Jesus. And he said, through that seed, through that descendant of yours, all the families of this planet are going to be blessed. And here we are this morning. We know Jesus. If you have a relationship with him, you are blessed because God kept his promise to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. God told Jacob, this is what I'm up to. This is what I'm doing. And I need to work in your life so that you can be the father of this country. And then he says, I'm going to be with you. What a great thing. And listen, that when we have worship and things go on, that's what happens here. I hope that God speaks. It's not about what Mike says. It's not about how funny or not funny. how well or not well I speak. Sometimes I go listen to my messages online, and I'm just like, wow, I really said that? But see, when it's all said and done, my goal is to stand up here and hopefully share with you in a way that you will hear the voice of God, not the voice of Mike. God will say something in your life. He'll say, listen, this is who I am. I'm God. Follow me. Trust me. And I'm up to something. I'm doing great things on this planet. And I want you to know me. And I want you to follow me because I want you to use you while I'm blessing everybody on this planet through my son, Jesus. And oh, by the way, I'm with you. And so Jacob is laying there. He's having this dream. He's seeing these angels go up and down. God speaks to him. What a cool dream. I mean, how would you like to wake up from a dream like that? But see, look at what happens in it. Verse 15. It says, behold, I'm with you. I will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place. You think? Wow, God was here. And I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Jacob goes, I mean, Jacob isn't jumping up going, woohoo, yay, God. Jacob is kind of freaked out. He's kind of bothered. He's terrified. In fact, two words in the text where it says he was afraid and how awesome are basically the same word where it really deals with the idea of fear. Jacob isn't like high-fiving God, you're my buddy. Jacob is going, God was here, and wow, am I safe? Am I okay here? God promised me, but I know God's a big God. I know God is a consuming fire. I know God is pretty awesome. But then what his response, and this is what I want you to see, his response to this whole situation. God has given him this dream. God took the initiative. By the way, that's the whole story of the Bible, is that we are, you know, hurting and messed up and have issues, and God took the initiative. If you've studied Genesis with us, you ought to pick up a parallel between this and a previous story. Where have we seen a ladder or a stairway before? Does anybody remember? Remember the Tower of Babel? Where the people built a tower to God, and there was a stairway that went up. There's a parallel, actually, in this passage. People tried to build a stairway to God, and we can't do it. But now God is building a stairway down to us. God takes the initiative in the life of Jacob. But look at Jacob's response. Verse 18. So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. So he takes this rock, he builds it, you know, kind of up and puts some other rocks around it, and he builds a pillar. And then he pours oil, signifying that he is setting this apart as a holy place. This is a great place. I've had places like that in my life. I've been to camps where I just knew God spoke to me, and I could take you to the very place where God spoke into my life. I've been in worship services where God really touched me, and I kind of set up a shrine in my mind to that place, and that's okay. That's kind of what Jacob's does. But then he goes on in verse 19, he gives it a name. He calls the name of the place Bethel. And the name of the city was Luz at first. Bethel means the house of God. So he builds a shrine. He gives the place a new name. Says, this is the house of God. But then he said, he called in verse 20. Jacob made a vow. That's not bad. He's going to make a promise with God. But look at the promise. If. All right, mental note. If you're going to like make a deal with God, if you're going to be like, all right, God, me and you, we're going to set up this situation, and never, never start the deal when you're making with God with the word if. Jacob's had this experience where God stepped out of heaven. God showed him his glory. He touched the heart of Jacob. He said, I'm going to come down to you. Jacob wakes up, builds a shrine, renames the place. He says, all right, God, I've got an altar to you. This place is now holy in my mind. It's a great place. We've renamed it Bethel. Okay, God, if you will do this, 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 and this, I'll do this, 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 and this. That's what goes on. He says, if God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord will be my God. If God, if you will keep me safe and you'll bring me back to this place and I get back to my mom and dad's house, if everything works out, if I have food and if I have clothing, if you will keep your end of the deal, when that's all said and done, God, then you'll be my God. I'll be cool with that. The God file. And then he goes on to say, and this stone which I've set up for a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. Do you see that? All right, God, here's the deal. If you'll take care of me, you'll give me a bunch of stuff, make me rich, bless me, give me a good wife, give me a good home. Everything works out perfect. If you bring me back home to my parents' house, when I get there, when I get back to this place, this pillar, this holy place to you, then you'll be my God. I'll follow you. And at that point in time, I'll give 10% of everything I have back to you. What a deal, God. Go. And God's going, if I wanted your 10%, if that's all I wanted out of this, I'd have just kept the money in the first place. See, that's what happens so often when we compartmentalize faith. We go, okay, God, if you will do this, if you'll do this, I'll serve you, I'll follow you. We come to God in times of crisis. God, if you'll get me out of this, I'll give my money to you. God, if you will help me out with this test that I didn't study for, I'll be at church early Sunday morning. God, if you'll keep me from getting caught with this issue I have. I mean, God, this is a big one. And if anybody found out, so God, if you'll do this for me. We bargain with God. And we pull out the God file when it fits us. Here's what I want you to say about this. First of all, as we go on and study this, we're going to be looking at Jacob's life next week after this. He's the same dude. But the other thing, I mean, when he leaves, he's the same miserable cuss that he was before he came to Bethel. But the other thing I want you to notice about this, he is doing the same thing with God that he did with Esau, that he did with his dad, that he's done with his mom. He's trying to bargain and barter his way into his own well-being. But God is getting a hold of the life of Jacob. We compartmentalize our faith. I don't know, I do it. I pull out the God file. That's what Jacob's done. This morning, for a few minutes, I'm just going to introduce you to some people. I'm going to do it really fast. Some people that I think may be just like Jacob and kind of have their God file and have a way to just pull out God when it counts, you know, only when I need him. And this is a different way. You may find yourself in this. If you're here and you're one of these names, sorry, I'm not talking about you. The people in this story are fictional and do not mean to represent real people a lot. Okay, and so the first one I want to introduce you to Emotional Emily, okay? Emotional Emily is a person who compartmentalizes her faith because she is looking for emotional experiences. She is a person who shows up at church and she just loves songs to God. I mean, I've learning culture a little bit. I'm old dude now. And some of the new styles of music, there's so many different styles. My understanding, there's like a whole genre of music called emo now, which I thought was about a pizza. But it's like this whole music for people who just want to cry and feel loved and, yuck. Not getting emo music. But anyway, this music that is just, and they like music to God, and they like to come and they'll lift their hands and they'll praise, and while they're praising, they're weeping. Listen, I want you to understand, nothing wrong with any of that. It's good sometimes to be moved in our emotions. It's good sometimes to be challenged in our heart as we come, whether it's at a service or you're listening to a song or you go somewhere else. It's great sometimes that we have encounters that move our emotions. And some of us are really emotionally wired, especially a lot of you ladies are emotionally wired. That's great. But Emotional Emily is all about the emotional experiences. She doesn't really want to learn anything. She's pretty bored when the pastor gets up and talks. She's just looking for the next set of songs, the next emotional experience. She lives her life not really ever being changed. But what she does is she comes to church service after church service after church services just to get her emotions moved. That's Emotional Emily. And sometimes we can be a person or a people that we're moved by our emotions, but we're not moved by God. Another person I want to introduce you to is Religious Rex, okay? Religious Rex is this guy. He's kind of stoic, you know. He's got life in order, or at least it seems, but he is about the checklist, okay? He sees church as something he does to fulfill this duty. It's said in the passage that Jacob kind of said, okay, God, and then I'll give a tenth to you. We take offerings during the service, and it's kind of weird and awkward because we live in a culture that thinks all the church is doing is asking for money. And to be honest with you, the reason we take up offerings, yes, it takes money to do church. I get that. But God will supply. I believe that with all my heart. But the reason we take up an offering as part of worship is because that is a great time for us to say we love Jesus with all our heart, and this is a way we can give back to him. That's not Jacob. Jacob's kind of this dude. I'm going to give 10% so that God will look at me and think, I'm okay. I'm going to go to church. I'm okay. I've done my religious duty. I'm okay. And Religious Rex just is all about the checklist. He's about fulfilling the duty of church. He's pretty religious. He gets there every week. I mean, he doesn't miss a whole lot of church services because his view of God is God up in heaven, who's this, you know, the old principal who, you know, has this big old yardstick in one hand and a clipboard in the other. And he's, you know, checking the list, you know, and if you're out of line, he's ready to take that, you know, yardstick to you. That's the way he sees God. And so he's just trying to make sure he's on God's good side today. And the way to do that, especially if I went out and, you know, acted a fool over the weekend, be at church Sunday. Get the, you know, make sure it balances out. I'm okay. Religious Rex, though, when he fulfills the duty, he walks away feeling good about himself. He doesn't want to really hear from God. A third person I want to introduce you to is Doctrine Don. Doctrine Don is a guy who's got a big old fat black Bible. He likes big book, you know, he cannot lie. He carries the Bible around. He's, you know, he is the guy who shows up in church and he is note taker number one. Now, we provide notes for you in the service if you're the type of person who enjoys taking notes. Don's, man, when Don leaves the service, he's got a freaking book ready to go home with him that he has written out all the stuff. But not only that, Don can argue doctrine. He can argue beliefs with anybody. I mean, he can stand toe-to-toe with you and talk about transubstantiation, consubstantiation, all the substantiations that most people don't care about. He knows them all. He knows what Calvin said and Luther said and Augustine said. He's kind of got figured out what Jesus said, even when Jesus didn't say it. He's got all this stuff. He knows his doctrine. He knows what he believes. When he comes to church, he listens to the guy who's preaching, and he doesn't really listen to what's said. He just figures out what he disagrees with. Right? This is this guy. And he's got a great system of beliefs that don't affect who he is on a daily basis. Doctrine's a good thing. It's important when we come to Jesus that we really figure out who he is and what he said to us, that we understand the teachings of the Bible. But doctrine is a way to know Jesus. It shouldn't replace Jesus. If you study the Old or the New Testament, you'll find these guys called Pharisees and Sadducees. And without a whole lot of explanation, they knew their Bible. They missed Jesus. That's doctrine. Doctrine Don. Compartmentalized. The God file is all about beliefs, doctrine, arguing, not about changing. And then there's Event Elaine. Event Elaine is this person who just lives from event to event to event. Coming to church or going to a conference, you know, she'll go to every women's conference. You know, when all these ladies' conferences come to town, she goes to every one. And it's like going to these events, going to church, is almost like a drug for her. It's almost like, I need the next hit because my life is falling apart. I don't know what to do, and I get to an event, and I go, woohoo, and I kind of get this high from the event, and I feel good, and then I can go deal with life. The events never bring change. The events never challenge me to be different. It's just another way of pulling out the God file, making my life work, getting the next fix. All right, the last person I want to introduce you to this morning is Family Frank. Family Frank started coming to church because his mama drug him to church, right? She brought him to church every Sunday. He went to all the backyard Bible clubs. He was in church, you know, Sunday school and all that stuff all his life. Always went to church until college. He went to college, and when he went to college, he got away to school and went, woohoo, mama can't take me. I'm staying out late on Saturday, and I ain't getting up on Sunday morning. That's it. And he kind of blows off college, or blows off God and blows off church. He's really put the God file way back here. He pulls it out when he forgets to study for a test, or when he, you know, doesn't do well in a subject, or when, you know, he really messes up his life, he'll pull it out, but not enough to really get him involved in church again. But then Frank got married. Frank now has two kids, and Frank realizes that if he doesn't get his kids some religious training, those kids are going to end up just like him. And he's not real sure he's comfortable with that. And so the easiest way to get them to be better than he is to get them to church, except he started the whole cycle again. But Frank just comes because he wants to make sure his family's there. He doesn't really connect with anything that goes on. He doesn't want to be part of a group that's a small group, or he doesn't want to connect to a ministry, doesn't want to serve. He just wants to make sure he gets his family to church. Now listen, this isn't comprehensive, and I see a little bit of myself in all of these. I especially see myself, me, in number three, big time. And maybe you find yourself in one or more of these. Jacob, there's a little bit of Jacob in all of them. My point is that there's all kinds of ways that we create little systems in our life to do the God file. When we do worship on Sunday morning, I'm just being real gut honest with you. It is so hard. What happens here for an hour, I was talking to Nick this week, and he goes, "What's just crazy about this is that you are spending multiple hours. I am spending multiple hours. The band practices for multiple hours. We meet for 3 hours once a week just so we can have creative stuff and put a video or have a file cabinet or come up with ideas. Hours goes into this event, and then hour and 15 minutes later, we're walking out of here, and did people have anything that was life-changing? But here's the thing I want you to hear more than anything this morning. We can put on a great show. And if God doesn't move in people's lives, it was worthless. On the other hand, we can flub everything up here. The music can stink. The preaching, I can be fumbling over my words and just get everything wrong and bore the heck out of everybody. But if God speaks to people's lives, nothing we do in here, I love doing worship. I love doing church, and I hope it speaks to you. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's relative and relevant, and that the way, you know, by using candles and visuals and video and having a band instead of an organ, you know, and some guy waving his arms, you know, if you've never been in a church like that, don't worry about it. Some of us have. We do church differently, but it's not a substitute for God. It's an avenue to God. We don't want people to come in here and go, "That was cool," and leave. I literally spend hours every week studying the scripture and just trying to wrestle with what is God saying in the passage. Not so I can stand up and everyone go, "Wow, Mike was cool." I hope sometime during the course of a message each week, something goes off on the inside of your heart and you literally say, "That's God. I'm not having a dream. I know God's speaking to me though." But then the challenge for all of us is to make sure then that when we have this experience, this event, we don't just take the file then, close it up, put it away, and go on with our lives, which is what we have a tendency to do. And so I want to close this morning by just sharing some things that I hope will help you think about when you show up on Sunday, okay? What maybe you can do to come in here to make this more than just an event, a discussion, to prepare yourself to have an encounter with God that then goes beyond what takes place on Sunday morning. Because the goal is not just to have this one thing, file, put it away, open that lunch file, and move on. The goal is to have something that integrates into life where God moves in such a way that you hear his voice and something's different. And so, real quick, let me challenge you. When you show up on Sunday, come with some things. These are some things you can do to get rid of the God folder. And first of all, come with anticipation. When you show up, don't anticipate how good the band's going to do. Come with some anticipation of, hey, I think God might speak today. He might say something. I need to be ready. Be like that kid who's sitting in the third row of a Cardinal game with his glove up all the time. You know, you ever see that kid? Always got his glove on. Why? Because maybe, just maybe, Albert Pujols is going to hit a foul ball. It's going to come his way, and he's not going to have one moment where he's not ready to catch it. Come to church saying, maybe, just maybe. I'm not sure, but maybe, just maybe, God will speak, and if he does, I'm ready for it. Second thing is come on Sunday morning, come with awe. Realize that this God is incredible, an awesome God. When we help you experience, like the music, one of the things we want you to do is emotionally, it's a good emotional thing to wrestle with the incredible nature of our God. Come with awe. Third thing is I want you to come in repentance, which means I come to God right up front knowing, you know what? God, I didn't live this week or even this morning like I should, and I love you, and you love me. And I'm not repenting. I'm not turning from myself and my sin and my wickedness just because I feel like if I don't, you're going to beat me with a ruler. I'm turning from that because you love me deeply. And I want you to change my life from the inside out. See, Jacob, it takes him another 20 years before he gets this, that he's got to be a different dude if he's going to live for God and God's going to use him the way he wants it to. If we come, we say, listen, God, I'm here. I'm broken. I have nothing to offer and you have everything. Change me. And last thing is come to the cross. Because see, everything is about Jesus. This is just some ladder. It's just, you know, these angels going up and down. How's this about Jesus? Here's the answer. In John, the book of John chapter 1, Jesus is having a conversation. He's having a conversation with this guy named Nathanael. Nathanael becomes one of his 12 disciples. And in this conversation, Jesus calls Nathanael. He's never met him before, but Jesus, in the middle of this conversation, tells Nathanael some things about his life that only God could know. It's about a secret place in his life where Nathanael was all by himself and nobody else, not even his brother, would know about this. And Jesus tells him some things about that. And Nathanael's like, dude, you're freaking me out. What's going on? And Jesus says, I want you to follow me. And Nathanael says, I'll go for it. And this is what Jesus said. He said to Nathanael, do you believe simply because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? That's what it's talking about. Jesus told him things that only Jesus could know, only God could know. You'll see greater things than that. Jesus said to them, I tell you the truth. You will all see heaven open and angels of God going up and coming down on the Son of Man. See the imagery? What's he talking about? Jesus saying, listen, you're going to see these angels coming up and going down. And immediately this Jewish guy goes, Jacob's ladder, this story in Genesis, that's what Jesus is talking about. And Jesus says, listen, when you see that, guess who's the one standing next to the ladder? Me. Who built the bridge from heaven to earth? Who opened the door for us to go to heaven? Jesus. Come expecting to meet him. He died on the cross for you and for me. Now, what's really cool about this whole story is that he set up this altar. Here's the stone that represents his brokenness and his wrecked place. And he sets up this altar, but then he leaves it. And that's the problem. And just kind of this morning, we're going to do something a little different, just as kind of a take-home reminder of what was said this morning. Because I don't want to be a person who closes the file on Sunday morning and goes, opens my lunch file and goes on about my life. I want to be a person who the God file isn't a file. It's something that permeates everything about all the rest of them. That God is in all of my life and that all of my life is ultimately about him. I don't want to build a memorial and walk away. I want to serve him. I want to know him. I want God to change me. So we've got kind of a reminder. We're going to give you a stone this morning, just a little rock. Our ushers are going to come. They're going to help us out, okay? They're going to pass these out, all right? And we just want you to take one. It's just kind of a gift for you this morning. A reminder of how Jacob took that stone, built an altar, and left. But here's what I hope you'll do with it this week. I hope you'll take this stone, and first of all, in the next few minutes, just hold it. As we worship, remember that God loves you. And even when you're broken, he's there for you. But then I want you to take that and throw it in your pocket, put it on your dresser, put it somewhere this week as a reminder that God can speak to you and that the God file needs to always be open. Not just an hour on Sunday morning, but all of life is about him. If you're here this morning and you don't have a relationship with Jesus, it starts by knowing Christ, and we'd love to talk to you about what that means, how to come into a real relationship with the God who created you. If you're here today and you are a follower of Jesus, but you're kind of like Jacob where you've been struggling, I want you to know that God will speak into your life and you can trust him. We're going to worship for a few minutes. As we worship, this is our response, our time to say, God, we love you, we're crazy about you. As we worship, we're just going to invite you to do that with us. I'm going to pray here, we're going to stand, everybody worship. And this is our time to say, God, this is more than just me singing some songs and being emotional or being event-oriented. I want you. But the challenge then is to say, when the song is over and we leave here, that I don't close the file, but that literally I'm saying, God, I want you in all of my life. Let's pray. Jesus, we love you. Thank you for speaking to me this morning at least. Open our hearts today to the fact that you want all of us and that worship is an event we come together, but it's supposed to be a time where you move in our lives to do something great. And help us leave here challenged by that. Thank you for Nick and the band, the time they put together, helping lead us to the throne. This morning, as we just have a few minutes to reflect, speak to our hearts. In your name I pray. Amen. Stand and sing with us, all right?